Okay, so we were talking about who your customers were at the start. And so government and
Nortel, yeah.
Nortel, sorry.
It's a Canadian company, actually, that was very big. They would build these huge phone switchers, and we would sell parts for like $200. And so it was great for us because we could get thousands on a wafer, and we loved that business. It was a great business.
And you kind of broke from Tektronix just because they didn't have any need for the product?
Yeah, they just didn't, they really didn't. I mean, we didn't have a lot of matches with their equipment. So, yeah, it was, it wasn't that they didn't like us or anything like that. It's
Right.
just we just didn't have a lot of business with them. And so they we went public and they were still a major shareholder at that time, but they pretty much sold their shares and made their money and got out of being a part of Tektronix.
And at that point, did
Or
you
TriQuint,
change?
sorry.
Did you change locations at that point? Move off the
No,
campus? You just hung
no.
around.
Yeah, we just formalized our agreements with them, and so we paid them rent and so on and so forth, and we did have a couple of parts that they were using, so we pretty much outgrew the space that we had there, and there was no, they didn't want to give us more space, and so they had multiple tenants like that. Another company that was right next door to us was called Sight, and they made silicon devices that were image parts. They actually made one of the CCDs, is what they're called, charge coupled devices, that went into the Hubble telescope. So, and they were right next door to us in this big fab building that Tektronix built. So they had multiple tenants like that shared that space. And so I really don't think they kicked us out as much as we just wanted to have our own place. We wanted to have this place that we, built ourselves and could own as our own.
And what year did you move here?
We moved here in 98. We
Okay.
built it in 97. I remember going around with a couple of guys, actually with the president at that time, and looking at different buildings. We were trying to find the cheapest option that we could. And from time to time, there were fabs that came on the market, but right at that time, there weren't any. We couldn't find any space that really met our needs, and so we just did Greenfield here. And we scrimped as much as possible, and so we built this for as little as money as we could. And over the years, that's cost us because we didn't use the highest quality materials and stuff, but it was our own. It was TriQuint, so that was kind of fun. It was really a huge accomplishment, I think, for everybody that was working here, that we had made it, right? We were our own company, really. We were totally out from under Tektronix.
How many people worked at TriQuint at that time? Had it
I
grown?
don't know, I could guess at a number, but it must have been 300 or so, maybe.
So it had
I don't
grown
know.
quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we had pretty much moved to the multiple shifts. Most of the time when we were on the tech campus, we just had like a week shift and a weekend shift, and we weren't running 24/7. But when we moved here, I don't know if it happened at that same time or just right before that is when we started going to a 24/7 operation. So,
Is that standard for
Yeah, semiconductor fabs want to run full. Okay. I mean, it's really an economy thing that if you're not full, it's really hard. So you need some volume to hit a critical mass. And we were always kind of right on that edge of having enough volume to be a going semiconductor company. I mean, I have to admit, in the early years, we were just a lab, and that's the way it was run. And that's pretty much the way we fit in at Tektronix as a lab. Mm-hmm. But here we turned into a real fab, you know, not just a lab. I like to call the labs like a boutique. And we have competitors who today who are still that kind of a size, but it's hard. It's really hard. When you get a certain amount of volume, just a lot of things get easier. Mm-hmm. And the 24/7 is one of those things. Is you just want to be running the fab as hard as you can to make everything pay.
Mm-hmm. Had the office culture changed a lot as it got bigger? Did it start to feel a little more like Tektronix? You were saying that.
Not so much. I mean, I think that happened after the millennium, you know, in the 2000s is maybe when we started to change. I think it was pretty much a kind of a Tektronix atmosphere. Most of the people that came and joined the company called it an Oregon culture. Because it's different than in California, you know, and other semiconductor fabs. So it's not hugely different, but to me, it's the culture feel is quite a bit different from like Intel. Intel is very confrontive and competitive. Mm. So they have a process. I never worked at Intel, so I don't really know firsthand, but they pretty much compete everybody against everybody else, and their natural plan is to fire 10% of the workforce every year, right? So they rank everybody, and if you're in the bottom, then you're asked to find a new job. They don't fire you from the company. They just move you around, right, to try to fit a better spot. And so, in my opinion, that makes people very individual. You know, it's hard to be a team, right? It's hard to try to make your team better when you know that you're vying for a job with your teammates, right? Again, I'd never worked there, so I don't really know what it's like, but that's what people have told me. Here, it's never been that way. There's no competition. I mean, we do rank people, and we do, you know, try to get people to perform as best as we can, but it's very much team-oriented. We want the team to succeed and not, you know, the individual really doesn't matter that much. Mm-hmm. I mean, people stick out because they stick out, but it's not that, you know, they have to. It's not a requirement. So it's a different culture, at least between us and those kind of companies. But so when we get people from other companies, that's what they say is, oh, it's kind of laid back here. That must be the way they do things in Oregon, right? It's just different. And so, and that's probably true, but I have no perspective because I've never been anyplace else. It's just been Tektronix and TriQuint, so... That's what it feels like to me, is that. So it seems like the best parts of Tektronix, because it's still small, even though, you know, we are much bigger now. We still, you know, that's what I tell people when I interview folks, is at this company, you just know that you make a difference. I mean, you don't have to wonder about what it is you do, because what you do makes an impact on the business of the company. So it's not hard to figure out what you're doing, and you don't feel like a cog in a big machine. You feel like an important piece, and that's the way it feels to me, at least.
How there's been a lot of bubble bursting of the tech industry.
Yes.
Over the time you've been here, how has TriQuint weathered the storm? And I mean, you said that you moved here kind of late 1990s. That's when a lot of companies were not doing so well.
Right. Yeah, we did have, we go with the cycles. And semiconductor industry has those cycles. I'm not that sure about electronics in general. I mean, that's pretty much a yearly cycle for consumer things. I mean, everybody's shooting for Christmas, right? And so there's a natural that cycle. But in semiconductors, it seems like that there's kind of a built-in cycle that they go through. What happens is, and it's very strange, but you can bet on it. I mean, you could go to the stock market and count on the fact that they'll have a bust, and then it's a slow recovery. And as people pick up, what normally happens is they worry about being able to get enough. And so all the semiconductor companies are building as much as they can, but sometimes it's not enough. And they have this thing called allocation, where you can only build so many, and so you allocate to certain customers that ability to build what they want. And so what happens is when things start picking up and getting tight, then the customers will start ordering more than what they need because they're afraid of allocation, right? They want to make sure they get it. And so they overorder, and then eventually that leads to another bust, right? Because they have too much inventory. They get so much that they have to do something about it, and so they just stop ordering. And so it's just a crash. And as long as I've been in this business, it happens like on a 3-4 year cycle. You just, you do that. But in the last, say, 7 years for us, it's been very steady because of the business that we're in the cell phone thing. Before that, we did have the cycle problem. Mm-hmm. And even before that, back when we were trying to be a viable company in the early 90s, before we even built our building, we did have some tough times, and we actually did have some layoffs where we laid off people a couple of times. And we didn't want to do that, but we had to. And so we did have some pretty tough times, but once we went public and figured out how to be a public company, then we didn't have layoffs after that. So that ended before we moved to this building. I don't think we've had a layoff since we've moved here.
Wow.
But we did have two big layoffs before that. Big was a relative term. Just whenever you have to fire somebody who's working for you, it's hard. It's a hard thing to do. So we did that, and one of them was when we did go public in the very beginning. We had to go through that because we basically combined several companies together to get enough mass to be a real company, and that was a hard time in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm. But now that their smartphones are using the gallium arsenide, you're in pretty good shape.
Very good shape, and we have been in a pretty much a state of not being able to make enough.
Wow.
We just can't make enough for the customers that we have. But I have no illusion that this will also be a business that ends for us. I mean, I think I told you on the phone, in the late 90s, we were in the receiver part of the phone.
Mm.
And so we had a great business then where we sold a lot of receiver parts, and that business just went away in like a year. They converted all the phones to digital. They didn't need TriQuint parts, and the business just evaporated to nothing. And so we had to switch over, and that was a painful time for us to figure out how to make power amplifiers, because that was something that they did need gallium arsenide for, but it's not something that we built. Mm-hmm. We were focused on the other side, and so we had to convert the company. So it was lean. It was lean years, right? We didn't hire anybody. We hunkered down, did the best that we could. But and I think that will eventually happen with power amplifiers too. Eventually they'll morph into something where we just can't do it anymore. I mean, the hard part about the power amplifier market is all the parts and phones have to reduce in price 20% per year. Mm. So they're just going to pay, our customers are going to pay us 20% less next year for whatever it is that we do for them, even if it has to be better, because they're trying to cram more phone calls into the same space, and so the power amplifiers have to get more sophisticated and better and do that, but they still have to cost 20% less. And so the competition is going to get really hard, because as the price goes down, it's harder and harder to make money, right? We've been good at that. We've been doing very well. But if you would have talked to anybody in this company 5 years ago, they would never even dream of selling a part for less than like $5. And now it's 69 cents, right? I mean, who would have ever thought that gallium arsenide could be that cheap? Mm-hmm. But it is. And we're still making good money. But, you know, it's just, it can't last forever. We have to recognize that that's going to happen. So we have to figure out what's going to be next, right? What can we get into that would give us either higher volume or higher dollars that we can work on? And so, again, the diversity of the company and being in the military, aerospace, and all those businesses are solid and unchanging. Mm-hmm. They don't grow much, but you know, we make a certain percentage of our income off of those businesses. Mm-hmm. And so we'll always have those kind of things. And so when gallium nitride comes around, there'll be certain things that we can charge a lot of money for that those parts can do that no other parts will be able to do. We just have to be the first, right? Mm-hmm. Be as early as we can and be leaders in that market when we can get there. So it's still challenges. It's just different challenges, right?
Right. So how has your job changed at TriQuint in the 2 decades you've been here?
That's a good question. Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned to you, I started out as a manager of the reliability group, and I probably didn't change much at all for about 5 years. And then, let's see, that would have been up to about 90. I'm trying to get all these times straight. Maybe more like 10 years. It's a pretty constant type of a job for me. And then I got, basically I got promoted into my boss's job, because he chose to do a different job. And so the president of the company at that time came and said, "How'd you like to do Richard's job?" And I said, "Okay, I'll do that." I never really wanted to be a manager. Mm-hmm. There's certain parts of management that I liked, but I really liked the technology better. I liked, you know, I like breaking parts and figuring out why they break and how to make them not break, right? Mm-hmm. So that was the main part of my job, and as I got promoted into the higher job, then I got to do less of that, and I had to do more management stuff. And like I said, some of that was okay, and it was fun reporting to the president of the company and going to board meetings and things like that, but it was also a lot of stuff that I didn't like about it too. So I did that for 12 years, and in the middle, it turns out that TriQuint grew enough that they started adding more executives, and so I didn't report to the president after about 5 years or so. So I reported to a vice president, and that was actually better because I could get more things that I needed, and I didn't have to spend time doing management stuff as much. So it was okay. And then what happened at TriQuint in 2007 was they started a thing called the technical ladder. Because they kind of had this issue where you could be an engineer, an individual contributor, and there's a certain number of jobs that you could have. You could basically go from engineer 1 to engineer 5. So for most engineers, that's pretty good. It's just fine. And it turns out that most of the time, by the time when people got to an engineer 5, then they became a manager, and they would manage other engineers, right? And that worked for most people. But for people that absolutely didn't want to be a manager, they were stuck at 5, and they had no place to go. They could, if they wanted to go higher, they had to be a manager. So you had the engineering ladder, and then you had the manager ladder. And in 2007, they decided, well, we need something else. We need the technical ladder, so that these people who are technical-minded and want to be individual contributors and don't want to be managers can go higher. And so they invented this ladder. They didn't really invent it. Other companies have it. Intel has it. They kind of modeled it after what Texas Instruments has, the ladder. So they just copied it, right? And so at that time, I had built a group of, I don't know, like 18 people that worked for me as a director. Mm-hmm. And some of the people that I had were really good people. And they were all stuck behind me, right? So I felt like, you know, there's this ladder thing. I've had this job for 12 years. This might be my chance to get back and work more on the parts and less on the people. And, you know, I could let some of my really good people take my job and be director. And so I just did it. I just said, hey, it seems like a good change. So in 2007, I switched from being a director to being a TriQuint fellow on the technical ladder. And then 2 years later, I was promoted to a senior fellow. So now I'm at the top of the technical ladder with no place higher to go. But that's fine by me, because now it's basically I just get to mostly focus on the fun stuff, right? And so for me, it's perfect. I mean, it's just worked out really great for what I want to do. So I've played around in the management thing, and I know that that's not really where I'm the happiest. You know, like I said, there's some aspects of that I liked. I liked being included in, you know, in the executive information and that kind of stuff. But I just, you know, I just really like working on the technology. Mm-hmm. And so I can't imagine being any happier than the place that I get to work at now.
Okay, I want to switch gears a little bit and just talk about Washington County and how that influenced the tech industry, and then you can wrap up because I know I've kept you probably longer than I needed to. Do you live in Washington County? Or
yeah.
Okay. How, and have you ever considered moving to, say, another TriQuint facility in Texas or anything? Has that ever appealed to you, or...
Well, I've thought about it, but I don't really want to move. I mean, I think most people just like wherever they're at. And so when we acquired other companies, that was one of the things that amazed me, is people just don't like to move. I mean, we offer jobs to everybody that... of companies we acquire, and they just don't like to move from wherever they're at. And so I like it here. I've always, you know, at Tektronix, I lived like two blocks from the campus. So all of the 5 years I was there, I walked to work every day. I just loved it. And then I moved to a place where I actually had to drive to work, but it was not very far. And then when we built this building, I pretty much stayed in Beaverton. Mm-hmm. So I live in the Bethany area. Mm-hmm. It's actually a Portland address, but it's Washington County. You know, it's pretty much Beaverton is where it's at. And so I have a fair commute, and I don't really like that, but my family liked being in the Beaverton School District, and so we just pretty much stayed there. People don't like to move, right? They like to be where they're at. So I would much rather live out here and be within walking distance of work, but you know, my family just liked it in Beaverton, so that's where we kind of stayed, so that they could... My daughters, you know, went through Westview High School and all that, and so they like that, so that's why we kind of stayed there. Mm-hmm. But I like being in proximity to where I'm working as much as I can. I have nothing really against Washington County. I mean, I grew up in Pendleton, which in my opinion is God's side of Oregon, where it doesn't rain and it's really nice, but you know, the rain doesn't bother me that much, so I'm happy to live here. My wife is from the coast. Mm. She's from Newport, so she's used to the rain. So this is a very nice compromise for us to live in between the coast and Pendleton.
And you mentioned that when you were first looking for work out of college, you were not interested in working in the Silicon Valley. Was it too big of a city? Was that the...
Yeah, I was a country boy, you know. I grew up in Pendleton. I cut wheat for a living, you know, did farmer rancher type stuff, and you know, it's a town of 10,000 people, and I just really didn't think I would like city living. I didn't really want to go there. I did go to interview just to see, you know, if there was anything special about it or not. And like I said, that was a really nice thing about that time frame, is you really got to get to know the company, and, you know, they would even give you like an extra day. You could look around and check out prices of things. And, of course, Silicon Valley was crazy. I mean, nobody lived within 50 miles of their work, let alone, you know, next door. And most of the people that I talked to and checked out things with said, you know, they'd get like two or three college people together to be able to afford a place to live in the, you know, down in Silicon Valley. And it just wasn't worth it for me to do that. You know, I just didn't want to. I didn't want to do that, so I wanted to stay in a smaller town environment.
In the time that you've been in Washington County, how do you think the tech industry has changed it? Has it grown significantly?
Oh, yeah. It's, yeah, huge. Huge growth. Just all the stuff between Beaverton and Hillsborough. You know, they used to be really separate cities, and now they're grown together, and Alloa's trapped in the middle still. I lived in Alloa for a while, so I know about that. But yeah, just lots of population growth and lots of companies. I mean, there's so many companies, and most people don't know most of them. I mean, they're just little hidden nooks and crannies of all different kinds of things. And I think most of that is because of tech. I mean, it just spawned a cottage industry of that kind of stuff. And so there's a lot of things that, you know, people just don't know about that goes on here.
Do you think it's changed for the better or for the worse in the time you've been here?
Well, it depends on your perspective. I mean, from... If I was living in Pendleton, I would say that it's worse, right? Because I just don't like population growth and that kind of stuff. But for the people that live here, I think it's better. I think it's a good thing, right? I mean, it's kind of what we talk about at TriQuint in terms of what we're really doing, right? You know, we're in business to make money, but it's fun for us because we make life better for people. I mean, cell phones, some people might not like them, but it's a good thing, right? It makes life easier, better. You can connect to people. It's a good thing, I think. And so that's the really satisfying part about what we're doing. When we were building fiber optics chips and things like that, it's harder to make that connection. Mm-hmm. But when you're in consumer things that your neighbor buys, it's a lot easier. You can see, wow, you know, I improved their life a little bit, you know, just by being able to enable these different things, like GPS, for example. We built GPS circuits way back in the 90s. And some of our other part of our company that I haven't really talked about in Florida, they had parts in the first GPS satellites that, you know, let those things work. And back then, the government really kept the technology kind of away from consumers. So they could locate different things, but as far as the consumer people weren't allowed to use all the frequencies that pinpointed the stuff. So back in the old days, you could be like 100 meters was the accuracy, but it was on purpose. It wasn't that the technology couldn't do it. It was that the government just didn't want to let that out, right? And so, but it was really cool, but nobody knew about it. Nobody really knew about what GPS was or anything like that. So we did a lot of stuff like that. And it's not near, like I said, if it's something that your neighbor buys, it's a lot more satisfying than something that you know is cool, but nobody else has heard of it. So that's kind of the way it goes. But so it's fun now. It's very fun.
So you touched on it already, but in your opinion, do you think that Silicon Forest developed in Washington County solely because of tech, or was there some other reason that it thrived here?
Well, I think that's pretty much my opinion, but that's my life experience, right, as I came from tech. So it's just my feeling that most of that other stuff came here because of that. You know, I have no idea why Intel came here. I mean, they stopped really building semiconductors in Silicon Valley just because of all the environmental issues and things like that. And so they weren't going to build stuff there. Most of the semiconductors, you know, moved to like Arizona and Texas and places like that. I can't imagine why Intel came here other than the fact that they knew that there were technology people from Tektronix, right? I mean, that were here. But I don't know that that's the reason they came here. You know, they got incentives from the state and other things, you know, that they would get any place that they would go. But, you know, I got to believe that they felt like that there was a workforce here that they couldn't get in other places. And in the beginning, I think it all came from tech. So, but they did, you know, they did same thing with, you know, the different computer companies that started up, because they, you know, why did they come here? Same reason. As I think that they knew that there was that core group of technology people that were here. But I don't know. I really, you know, who would know? How would you decide? I guess if you ask maybe somebody from those companies, but I bet there's very few people that know the real reason, unless it's just for that, which seems apparent to me. But again, I'm an insider, so I really don't know. It just seems that way to me, that Tektronix was a magnet for that, because again, they encouraged people to do that. They just said, go out and, you know, do, and, you know, invent stuff, play with things, make it happen. And those people were all spinning out and trying to do that, and some were successful and some weren't. And if they weren't successful, then those people could either come back to Tektronix, or hey, here's Intel, let's go work there, you know. Or it just seems that way, but I didn't really have no way of knowing. I don't know if anybody does, but.
Well, that's all the questions I have. Did you want to add anything that we didn't talk about?
No.
We pretty much covered everything.
I don't know what is interesting or not interesting or anything, but certainly TriQuint was born from Tektronix. Mm-hmm. There is no question about that. And we would not have been here for any other reason. And like I said, we're a consolidator now, so we're sucking in other companies and making them part of us, mm-hmm. instead of the other way. I mean, we did kind of have a spin-off, but it, you know, I claim it as a TriQuint spin-off, but it was really actually another spin-off from Tektronix. There's a company called Cascade Microtech, mm-hmm. which is a fairly large company. I don't know what their dollar volume is or anything like that, but they build a different type of an instrumentation and what we call probe stations. And when TriQuint spun off, there were two guys that came from Tech to our company, and they were very prominent designers of circuits here, but they also had learned about this probing technology while at Tech. And so they came to TriQuint, they worked here for several years, and then they spun out and started this company called Cascade Microtech, which grew to a pretty big company. I think that for a time they may have been even bigger than TriQuint. They're not so big now, but they're still a viable company. And so I claim that Cascade is a spin-off of TriQuint, but just only in my mind, probably. But so, and there have been people at TriQuint that have gone to other companies, of course, and, you know, tried to work there and stuff. So, you know, there is some movement, but it's not like Silicon Valley, or we have a factory in Costa Rica where that's what people do, is they move from company to company because that's the way they get raises.
Mm.
Is they just move around, and they get, you know, they get a raise by going to this company, and they work there for, I don't know, a year or so, and then they go to another company, and it just, that's just the way it is. But here, that doesn't happen so much. I mean, we've been getting a lot of people from Intel.
Mm-hmm.
There's very few people that go to Intel from here.
Hmm.
We did have a few people that went from here to Solar World. I heard that Solar World has now 1,000 employees there.
Wow.
And they're the ones that got the $80 million from the president to do solar cells. But I heard that they've used it all up. So they're not making money yet. But we did lose quite a few people to that, mostly from the fab.
Mm-hmm.
Those folks went there. And but, yeah, we rarely have people go from here to Intel, but we do have a lot of people recently that have come from Intel to here.
Due to the layoffs that they have over there?
Well, yeah, they had some trouble trying to figure out what they wanted to do. For a time, they were going to try to get into building cell phones.
Mm.
And so they had a pretty big operation that was working on that, and then they decided, you know, and then AMD would come out with a new processor, and they'd get all scared and say, oh, we have to focus on our core business. And so they would, you know, go back and say, we're going to build microprocessors and forget about those phones, you know. And so they would lose those people, and they would come here.
Mm.
And so we've had a fair amount come here from Intel, but it doesn't usually go the other way. But there are people that do move around.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's, I'm always amazed that people that you run into that have worked at Tektronix. You know? It's like, oh yeah, I used to work at Tektronix. So, just, you know, meeting with the museum committee and stuff, it's like most of them had worked at Tektronix.
Right.
So it just, like I said, that's my experience, is they're kind of the mother of almost everything around here that's technology oriented, but not everything, just seems like everything.
Right. Okay, well, I think you, do you want to add anything else for the record?